fellow paranormal aficionados, welcome back to Haunted 518. Today, I'm going to start this episode off by cracking open a beer, which is aptly named Urban Legend by Hog River Brewing, and it's a DIPA, a double IPA. They brewed it back in 2016, and then they brought it back in 2020, and I actually got a can from someone, so I hope it's still good. It's hopped with Galaxy, Nelson, Sauvin, and Amarillo for big, bold, juicy flavors of mango, peach, passion fruit, and citrus. Well, it tastes like it's not expired, and it's actually pretty delicious. So, with New York being steeped in rich history, it's not a surprise that the Empire State is home to some of the most notorious myths and legends. From headless horsemen and real-life haunted houses to ghosts guarding hidden treasure beneath the Statue of Liberty, some of the most fascinating tales and stories originated in this state. So the first one, and I've never heard of this, is buried pirate treasure on Liberty Island. The infamous pirate Captain Kidd is said to have buried his treasure on the island where the Statue of Liberty stands today. Formerly known as Bedloe Island, B-E-D-L-O-E, two soldiers tried digging it up in 1892, only to be terrified and knocked unconscious by Captain Kidd's ghost. The next is the Cardiff Giant. Considered one of America's greatest hoaxes, the Cardiff Giant was a 10-foot gypsum statue created by tobacconist George Hall to look like a giant petrified man. He first exhibited the Cardiff Giant in Cardiff, New York, claiming to have found the giant while digging a well. He charged 25 cents for a glimpse, and even P.T. Barnum took notice. Today, the statue can be seen at the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown. Next is Rip Van Winkle. This short story by Washington Irving takes place in the Catskills in the early 1800s and has become a legendary tale. As the story goes, Rip Van Winkle wandered into the woods one day with his dog and his gun. He met a group of men and shared their drink. About 20 years later, he awoke next to his rusted gun with a long beer and no dog in sight. When he went back to town, he learned that his wife had died, his friends were gone, and his children were grown. The men he drank with are thought to be the ghost of Henry Hudson's crew. The next is the Lake Champlain Monster, and I did do an entire episode on Lake Champlain. It's really fascinating how much paranormal activity is actually associated with the lake, so if this piques your interest, I definitely recommend checking out that episode. Loch Ness isn't the only lake with an elusive monster. Lake Champlain, which divides New York and Vermont, is reputed to have a mysterious creature of its own, Champ. Sightings of the creature can be traced all the way back to Native American inhabitants. The Abenaki tribe called Champ Tatoskok. Port Henry celebrates Champ Day on the first Saturday of every August. The next is the legend of Sleepy Hollow, which I also dedicated a full episode to the Sleepy Hollow area, so be sure to check that out as well. The legend of Sleepy Hollow was written by Washington Irving to accompany the story of Rip Van Winkle. Taking place in Tarrytown, it centers on a young man named Ichabod Crane who competed with the town hero to win the heart of a wealthy man's daughter. After his proposal was rejected, Ichabod was pursued by a cloaked figure that he identified as a headless horseman. The horseman threw his head at Ichabod, and after that fateful evening, he was never seen again. And the next one is Rochester's White Lady. And I talked about this when I did an episode, we stepped outside of the 518, an episode on all things Rochester, spooky and paranormal. And I had my two friends, Billy Lyons and Hannah Stolberger on paranormal to share their paranormal experiences and interest in it. And that was so much fun. So big shout out to them. Thanks so much, Billy and Hannah. And we definitely talked about Rochester's White Lady. The White Lady of Durand Eastman Park near Lake Ontario is a ghost who intentionally frightens teenage lovers who go there for some privacy. As the story goes, the woman had her own teenage daughter who went missing one day after a walk. After her disappearance, the woman spent the rest of her days walking along the shores of Lake Ontario looking for the missing girl. She eventually committed suicide by jumping off a cliff into the lake. And the next one is Cropsey. Legends have circulated for years about Staten Island's abandoned Willowbrook Mental Institution. Cropsey is one of the most enduring urban legends. This character, similar to the boogeyman, is said to kidnap local children. Particularly creepy in the 1980s, a former Willowbrook janitor was convicted with kidnapping two local children and murdering one of them. He's currently serving 2 25-to-life-year sentences. The next one is the Hudson River Ghost Ship. Since New York City was a tiny settlement known as New Amsterdam, there have been sightings of a phantom ship on the Hudson River preceding terrible and destructive storms. Some say the ship is sailed by Henry Hudson himself on a never-ending doomed voyage. The next one is the Ice Skaters of Central Park. Numerous sightings have been reported of two Victorian-era women ice skating in Central Park, one in a red dress and the other in purple. The women are said to be ghosts. They seemingly float through people and their skates never touch the ice. The phantoms are thought to be the Vandervoort sisters, wealthy spinsters who died within months of each other in the 1800s. Their favorite hobby together had been ice skating in the park. And the next one is the Amityville Horror House. The famous house on Long Island was the site of a gruesome murder of 6 family members in the 1970s. One year afterwards, a new family moved in, the Lutzes, only to flee the home with just the clothes on their backs 28 days after they moved in. They reported several freaky occurrences, including strange cold areas, family members experiencing nightmares and physical transformations, and a daughter's creepy imaginary friend, Jody. The next one is the ghost train that carries souls across Hell's Gate Bridge. Hell Gate Bridge is a vast steel and stone construction that straddles the East River in New York City, and more than lives up to its name as it's haunted by ghostly trains that carry the souls of the dead. Local legend tells that the train carries the souls of people who drowned or had their bodies dumped in the river. People who climb the bridge will often see strange lights from trains that never actually arrive, or spectral locomotives dragging cars full of lost souls. Mafia victims, old Dutch explorers, and suicide victims all sit next to each other in the carriages, sharing one last ride to the hereafter. Or perhaps their souls are trapped on the trains in a private sort of hell. Either way, the story is no less unnerving for its anachronisms. The next one is in Montauk, New York. Supposedly, it's a center of alien contact, mind control, and time travel experiments. If you've seen Stranger Things on Netflix, a lot of this is going to sound familiar, and there's a good reason for that. The strange things that happened and may still be happening at Montauk, New York, were the inspiration for the show. Montauk is a long-time center of weirdness. Its old military base, Camp Hero, now abandoned and serving as a state park, is said to have been the site of top-secret black book experiments in the 1960s through the 1980s that involved alien contact, psychic experiments with children, and even time travel. Most of what we know about these bizarre happenings comes from the accounts of Preston Nichols, an electrical engineer who claimed he worked at the site during that period of time. According to Nichols, the facility was built to turn kidnapped children into psychic soldiers, using technology supplied from alien spacecraft. Nichols says that he interacted with at least 3 different alien species at Camp Hero, and that the research teams were working there ripped a hole in space-time in 1983. No word yet on whether a kid named Eleven has escaped from there. The next one is in upstate New York, there is a haunted Air Force base. And I've definitely talked about this. It's the Plattsburgh Air Force Base. That is in the episode that I dedicated entirely to the Plattsburgh area. So definitely check it out. That is a really spooky area and there was a lot to tell. So, Plattsburgh Air Force Base has been associated with many strange occurrences over the years. But since it is no longer an active base, military base, its ghostly pedigree has been kicked up a notch. There are many haunted spots at the old base, including the old gym, which was once used as the base morgue, and where witnesses have heard screaming and pounding, and at the cemetery where ghost soldiers are said to march through the night. There have also been reports of spirits reenacting battles from the French and Indian War, and a Revolutionary War-era ghost who guards the base entrance. There's even a notorious building 666, which once served as the base crematorium, and now hosts a revolving door of soldierly ghosts, according to reports by some security guards. The next one is upstate New York is a hotbed of Bigfoot activity. And this one I covered in more depth in my episode on Kinderhook. So if you didn't know, I didn't know anything about that. I didn't realize it. So the Kinderhook area episode I did definitely goes into detail about everything there. Most people associate Bigfoot with the Pacific Northwest, but in fact, there's evidence that the creatures are common in many stretches of pristine wilderness across North America, including the old forests of upstate New York that cluster around Lake Champlain and Essex and Warren counties. Many people have reported hairy wild men in the area over the decades, but one unlucky fellow encountered Bigfoot close up twice in the span of just a few years, and both run-ins with the creature were terrifying. The first happened on June 25th, 1989, when Scott David Harris and two friends were looking for one of their brothers who was lost in the woods late at night. Walking along a railroad track that followed Lake Champlain's shoreline, they heard awful thrashing, growling, and metal ripping noises coming from the south bank of the trail. And whatever it was seemed to hear them too, because the noises it was making stopped and it came over to check them out. Harris couldn't get a good look at the creature in the dark, but as his friends ran off, he stuck around long enough to feel its breath and realize it was a huge and smelly beast. When he ran, it chased him, and only stopped its pursuit when Harris and his friends broke out of the woods and onto the nearby road. But Bigfoot wasn't done with Harris yet. A few years later, in 1993, Harris was parked on a trail near Westport, New York, with another friend waiting for a party to start, when he saw a huge, black, hairy creature coming out of the woods and reaching for the car's rear door. Harris alerted his friend, who immediately drove away, and Harris saw the creature rear up in the car lights with its glowing red eyes. And then sticking in the Kinderhook area, the next one is a floating blob monster haunted the woods of Kinderhook, New York. Bigfoot isn't the only forest monster in the wilds of New York. There's also a flying blob. Most accounts of the Kinderhook monster come from the 1960s, and at least six different people claim to have encountered the creature. The being is described as an amorphous white shape that floats above the ground and maneuvered through treetops into the woods near Kinderhook, New York. It was also capable of releasing a high-pitched whistling noise, which is what first drew attention of the witnesses to it. In one encounter, the blob creature watched two young children playing in the lake until they noticed it peering from behind a tree. Then they ran away in fear. In a second encounter, a lone hiker saw it floating down the hill towards him, and he also ran in fear. He came back later armed and with a friend in tow, but numbers and weapons served them not. Both men saw the creature moving through the branches of the trees above them and fled again in terror. The third recorded encounter involved two teenage campers who described it as appearing as a bell-shaped white thing that was moving around outside their tent one night. Just after they spotted it, the creature fled into the woods and hasn't been reported since. The next one is there's a cursed apartment on West 57th Street in Manhattan. As a city of over 8 million people, New York City is replete with haunted buildings and even just haunted parts of buildings. Take the case of the penthouse at 57 West 57th Street, for instance. It's said to be haunted by ghosts of two lovers who bickered each other to death. It started with the guy who invented spark plugs, Albert Champion. In 1922, he married a young showgirl named Edna Crawford, who proceeded to embarrass Champion by having an affair with a fellow much younger than him, a Frenchman named Charles Brazel. Brazel allegedly murdered Champion in Paris, while Crawford convinced the police that her husband had died of a heart attack. Because the police believed her, she was entitled to collect on Champion's will and used her inheritance to buy the penthouse at 57 West 57th Street, where she and Brazelle shacked up together. But Brazelle turned out to be an extremely jealous lover and often kept Crawford locked up in the penthouse. One day, he beat her to death with a telephone, after which her bodyguards threw him out of the window to his death. Of course, how Brazelle was able to keep Crawford prisoner, let alone beat her to death, when she had bodyguards, will never be explained. The next person to live in the penthouse was Carlton Alsop, a wealthy socialite. Alsop claimed to have heard the ghostly sounds of Crawford and Brazelle arguing, and of Crawford's high heels walking around. Eventually, the haunting drove him mad. His wife left him, he committed himself to a sanitarium, and even his dogs had nervous breakdowns. People continue to report the haunting by the bickering ghosts to this day, and the penthouse is a popular stop for ghost hunters in New York City. Then we move on to Devil's Hole. From an anonymous correspondent comes this tidbit. Once considered the honeymoon capital of the world, Niagara Falls is more than just motels filled with starry-eyed newlyweds. It's also the site of the infamous Devil's Hole. Just beneath the famous hauntings of Klett Castle, a long crumbling stairwell leads those who dare down into the Devil's Hole. Littered with graffiti, a cave carved into the side of the rocky cliff, it is a popular teenage party spot. The cave is several yards long and wide and has a unique design caused by water action from nearby falls. The Seneca Indians referred to it as the Cave of the Evil Spirit and thought it to be the entryway into hell. Supposedly, bad luck followed any who visited the dark, dank orifice. It is well known to locals as being cursed or haunted, and it has been a host of unhappy incidents that justify its reputation. In early 1763, in the Bloody Run incident, a convoy of British soldiers was ambushed by the Seneca Indians. After being scalped, the bodies of the soldiers were thrown off the cliff into the ravine below the cave. The only survivor was a young boy who fell from an overturned wagon and hid in a patch of bushes. Hours before his assassination in Buffalo, President McKinley visited the cave as a part of a tour of Niagara Falls. And lastly, because of that ravine, bodies from Niagara River often wash ashore right beneath the cave. And then we have the Lady of Lake Ronkonkoma. Lake Ronkonkoma is Long Island's largest freshwater lake and popular summer destination, but any man who goes there had better beware. The body of water is said to be the home of a vengeful spirit that claims one male life per year. Supposedly, Ronkonkoma was the name of an Indian princess who fell in love with a white settler who lived near the lake. Of course, their union was forbidden by her father, who didn't want his daughter fooling around with any treacherous European. Every night, the couple would sneak out and send messages of love to each other. Ronkonkoma would paddle her canoe out to the middle of the lake, where she would then float a message the rest of the way to her lover, who is waiting on the opposite shore. This continued for years until one day the princess was no longer able to deal with the arrangement and snapped. She wrote a final farewell note to her lover, floated it out on the lake. He received it on the shore, and minutes later her canoe washed up in front of him as well. Inside it was the princess's body. She had committed suicide in the middle of the lake. Crazed with grief, her lover also took his life. Since that day, Ronkonkoma has haunted these waters, becoming known to many as the Lady of the Lake. It has been said that she now drags one man into the lake each year, angered because she was not allowed the fullness of her love in her life. Many others have reported being drawn by some unforeseen force out to the center of the lake, as if something was trying to drag them under. These souls have been able to resist the pull of the Lady of the Lake and have lived to report the existence of the strange phenomenon. Another myth of Lake Ronkonkoma is that it is bottomless and its depths are dotted with caverns and subterranean passageways. Many of the bodies lost to Ronkonkoma never surface on the lake shores, but are sucked into these underground tunnels and later turn up in Long Island on the shores of the East River, even as far away as Connecticut. In some cases, bodies have disappeared for as long as 3 months before being discovered miles away from the spot where the unfortunate victim vanished. And the next one is Manhattan's Mysterious Mole People. Manhattan is a city of many distinct levels. Just look at its magnificent skyline and you'll see what we mean. The rich and powerful live in penthouses atop buildings that stretch high into the sky. Conversely, down on the ground, the workers of the city can be seen every day traversing the island on foot, by bus, by taxi, even riding below ground in the Manhattan subway system. But there is another level to Manhattan, one that most people never see and that many believe is simply a story, a figment of the imagination. But this level is all too real. It is dark, dismal, and full of sights that would shake the average person to the core. This hidden and ignored level of the city functions with its own rules. It lays deep beneath the city streets, beyond the point where most ordinary people ever venture. This is the world of the mole people. The thought of creatures living underground and posing a threat to those who live normal lives on the surface is not new to our culture. From the Morlocks of H.G. Wells and the Time Machine to the countless sci-fi pulp fiction tales, stories of such people have existed for years. In New York, fiction may meet reality somewhere deep beneath the surface. For many decades, thousands of homeless people have descended below the streets of the city and have found their way into the many abandoned train tunnels that lay buried, forgotten beneath the always evolving metropolis. Here, the destitute, the addicted, and the otherwise forgotten have gathered, simultaneously shunning the street-level society that rejected them, while forming societies of their own. They build homes, steal electricity, tap into water pipes, and create dwellings that are far more habitable than anything they could put together on the streets. The myths concerning these people grew more elaborate over the years. It was said that some never emerged from underground and that years without sunlight had affected their physical appearance to the point that they look more like bug-eyed monsters than men or women. It was whispered that children had been born into these underground societies and that some of these kids lived their entire lives in subterranean cities, never once coming up to the surface. The mole people were rumored to hate the surface dwellers, as they called them, with a fiery passion and would kill any who dared enter their dwellings. More audacious versions of this legend claimed that the mole people didn't simply kill surface dwellers, but ate them as well. Just as terrifying was the rumor that people had been kidnapped by vindictive mole people and taken underground, never to be seen or heard from again. Most New Yorkers dismissed the stories without a second thought. They were just tall tales, like the stories of the alligators in the sewers. However, in the early 1990s, it was discovered that the mole people, who seemed far too outlandish to be real, were actually an all too real and all too grim part of life in Manhattan. In 1993, journalist Jennifer Toth released her landmark book, The Mole People: Life in Tunnels Beneath New York City. Toth had heard the sensational rumors regarding them and decided to track down the truth of the existence or non-existence of these legendary folk. She spent a year networking with the city's homeless and exploring the tunnels beneath Manhattan. Her findings were truly shocking, illuminating an aspect of the homeless problem in New York that may have denied or been thought of as fiction. Toth didn't happen upon any mutated beings or inhuman creatures during her forays into the abandoned rail tunnels. She did, however, find there were close to 5,000 people living in dwellings built in these tunnels. Some were loners, mentally ill, drug addicted, alcoholics, or those who shunned human contact for whatever reason. Incredibly, there were also organized groups who banded together to form cohesive societal units, some with a membership of over 200 people. Toth encountered many different types of mole people gathered together in the tunnels, loose-knit groups who stayed close to each other for safety, others that lived communally and treated each other as family. Most lived in the tunnels beneath the Grand Central Terminal, one of the busiest commuter junctions in all of New York. Many of these people had their own social structures in place. For example, some groups had designated runners whose responsibility it was to go to the surface to forage for food and for medicines. Several groups had created intricate systems of tapping on pipes to communicate with each other over distances in the darkness of the underground. There were those who were violent and hoarded weapons, while others who were gentle souls who only wanted to be left in peace. Most didn't trust New York City's shelter system. They thought that the violence and thievery that happened there made the shelters worse places to reside than the tunnels. So that is a fascinating glimpse into what I knew nothing about. I think I've maybe heard of that mentioned in passing, but yeah, nothing more than that. And to kind of piggyback off of the underground Manhattan area, there also are legends that in the tunnels of Manhattan, they house secrets that are far more sinister than enclaves of homeless people. The groups behind those secret tunnels and their nefarious purposes are two favorites of the conspiracy crowd, the federal government and the not-so-secret society, the Masons. The Masons are a fraternal organization with branches throughout the world, and many believe that their powerful upper-level members are also involved in a number of covert conspiracies. In an issue of Shaverton magazine published in the fall of 1981, an author named R.L. Blaine Sanders claimed to know the location of an enormous triangular set of tunnels set hundreds of feet below the surface of Manhattan. The author contended that this was a deeply secret meeting ground used by a Masonic lodge to plan its most shadowy operations. The author's claim has become famous among conspiracy theorists, although it has never been verified or followed up on. The next one is the Clawfoot people. The Zoar Valley, Z-O-A-R, in a small area near Gowanda in the northwest portion of the state, has a history that's long been associated with the tales of the strange and bizarre. Perhaps the strangest tale of all to come out of the valley is that of the Clawfoot people. In the late 19th century and earliest 20th centuries, many of the inhabitants of the Zoar Valley were descendants of the same woman, an English prostitute who had settled in the area in the 1800s. There were over 200 relatives of this apparently very fertile woman, and all were known for their strange appearance. These were the Clawfoot people. Because of an exposure to syphilis, the prostitute was said to have passed it on to all her male offspring, a genetic abnormality that caused their hands and feet to be deformed into claw-like extremities. And this family grew, the abnormality appeared among more and more of the town's residents. The Clawfoot people became legendary in the area, and they were shunned as social outcasts with no place in normal society. And the last one that I have for you today is all about the sewer alligators in New York City. The sewer gator is a perennial American urban legend, so it's not surprising that it has a long pedigree in New York City. And to spice up the story, it turns out that real alligators have been found in New York City sewers before, so this particular urban legend is rather plausible. The typical story goes that New Yorkers vacationing in Florida or Louisiana decided to bring a baby alligator back to New York City as a pet, but when the gator gets too big to be cute anymore, the family flushes it down the toilet, hoping to be rid of the creature. The gator then survives and even thrives under the streets of the city, feeding mostly on rats and other vermin, eventually growing big enough to menace human targets such as sewer workers or transients. Some variations of the story include alligators who have turned albino due to the lack of light exposure, or who have grown so large that they are virtually dragons. And that wraps up our episode dedicated to all things myth, urban legends, and lore associated with New York State, hoaxes galore. So I really hope that you enjoyed delving into all of these different supposed things that have happened and are potentially still happening. And I did not know about, I would say, over 50% of these. So that was really interesting to take a look and hear about and learn a little bit more about some of these. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. And as always, I'd love to hear any stories you'd like to share, especially if you've been to any places that are associated with any of the stories that I tell. So we're on Instagram at Haunted518 Podcast, Facebook, Haunted518. I do post links to our episodes there and things that I've talked about in our episodes. Be sure to check out the two Halloween episodes I released last week, two bonus episodes, two in 1 week. And keep an eye out for some fun upcoming episodes. And we still have a lot more to talk about within the 518. So although I step outside of it here and there, it's always fun to hear about what the state and has to offer outside of it, as well as some other fun things just in the paranormal world. But I do really love delving into the cities and the towns, so slowly making my way through them. We're about 3/4 of the way through all of the towns in the 518, so there'll definitely be some more episodes, so keep an eye out. On that note, big cheers, and as always, happy haunting.